following program has been furnished and paid by Nathan P. Ross, CPA, and KSEV is not responsible for its content or the products or services offered.
Welcome to the Be a Planner Show with Nathan Ross, CPA, a show that helps you learn how planners can generate significantly more wealth now. Nathan will answer your questions about business or personal finance, or how to increase current cash flows and generate retirement savings to make sure you're on the right path, and so much more. Whatever your financial goal, Nathan can get you there faster. And now, here's your host, Nathan Ross.
Welcome to this week's Be a Planner Tax Mash Show with Nathan Ross. I haven't checked in on the news today, but it's passed both houses now, and it's really, aside from the new investment areas that money's going to be spent on, the green energy, all the electric car credits, things of this nature. It's very telling how Congress views the near-term impact of the deficit, or how they don't, I should say. And it's laughable what they're calling a piece of the act that's deficit reduction. It's absolutely laughable that they would. This would be like you putting an extra quarter in your savings account and bragging about how, boy, you're getting started now on savings, would be my assessment. Dan, how do you assess that?
That's a very good generally? Analogy.
Well, it's a peanut. And, of course, CBO, the Congressional Budget Office that we refer to at times, now they haven't done the final scoring. They did a scoring, a week or so ago on the tentative inclusions in that act. But, some amendments got made. They haven't rescored it. But they didn't agree with Congress on how much deficit reduction was going to take place on that version, and I seriously doubt they're going to agree it's much on this one. And I'm going to tell you, we're going to dwell on this more, the bulk of their deficit reduction, if you will. In fact, you could almost say it's the bulk of the tax revenues that get raised is from where, Dan? Where is that going to come from? How about fewer, the $200 million of it's going to come from our friends and neighbors that supposedly aren't going to see your taxes go up. It's certainly less than the $400,000 crowd through enhanced IRS reporting and efficiencies. Call it audits is what it is, even though the illustrious chairman of the director of the IRS is saying that there won't be any new audits, which I'm not sure you fall for that. I don't. I don't think you unleash an extra 87,000 agents the Democrats are referring to as the tax beast to raise revenues. I don't think that all comes from the 400,000 on up crowd. Most of them have CPAs and tax lawyers that can fight and argue with the IRS and maybe not pay as much as Congress thinks are going to get. But the small guy, the small business owner, the S corp owner, et cetera, they don't have the luxury of spending big bucks on tax resolution, tax disputes, and they're probably going to have to fork it over. And that's all part of this bill. And an incredible issue that I've noticed several weeks ago when the IRS announced their 2022 list of abusive tax shelters. We call it the Dirty Dozen, or they call it the Dirty Dozen. Commissioner Rettig, the head of the IRS, said that if you have these transactions in your return, you should contact us. You will get at least as good a deal, I think is how he phrased it, as if you have a tax pro representing you before us. We're going to make sure we give you the best deal And I'm going to tell you something. Commissioner Rettig worked for 30-plus years in the dispute resolution business, based in Beverly Hills, California, generated millions of dollars in fees. Doing what, Dan?
Settling taxes for people.
That's exactly right. And so for him to make that comment, I find it offensive, and it's disingenuous, and he knows it is, and that's amazing. That just should give you some idea of why you don't connect with the IRS unless you're calling to see where your refund is, maybe, and good luck on getting through. You might be that one out of 10 callers that gets through, maybe, right? So anyway, well, listen, we're going to go ahead and take a break. We'll be right back here in a few minutes with more of the Be a Planner show, the tax math version, with Nathan Ross and Dan Dubose, CPAs. We'll be right back.
Hey, if you'd like to contact Nathan for questions during the show today or during the week, you can text him at 713-581-0195, 713-581-0195, or you can send an email to Nathan at npross.com, Nathan at npross.com.
The Syndication Math Show with Nathan Ross, CPA, focuses exclusively on helping investors understand the current options for investing. The syndication arena has changed. You can now take advantage of direct online investing options without expensive upfront membership fees. Nathan Ross, CPA, discusses these options and more, including the math involved with partnership selection, reporting, and performance. On the Syndication Math Show with Nathan Ross, CPA, Sundays at 7 a.m. right here on KSEV.
Okay, we're back with the second segment of the Be a Planner Tax Math Show with Nathan Ross and my associate Dan Dubose, CPAs, and we were just beginning to talk about the legislation that is poised to pass. I think everybody on the Democratic side of the aisle, all 50 senators plus the tie-breaking vote with Ms. Harris, by no means is this bipartisan, and at one time that mattered to folks like Joe Manchin and maybe Senator Sinema as well, the Arizona senator. But for sure, Manchin was on record more than a few times lately that you don't undertake major legislation without some bipartisanship. But that's all melted away. You know, Mr. Manchin had the full court press put on him, and decided just magically that this amount of money was not going to create or spur any additional inflation. I think the phone calls from former Treasury Secretary, I believe it was former Treasury Secretary under Obama, Larry Summers, the Harvard luminary, I guess you might say. Did you see those reports, Dan, where apparently Larry Summers called Manchin multiple times to convince him that you're wrong on this inflation thing? Printing all this money doesn't really cause inflation. And magically, the iceberg melted that Manchin had become. But I don't know. I think they're wrong. But, hey, what's another, what, $790 billion when you throw it on the stack we already have? And for those of you that think the deficit is the $30 trillion that Washington will admit, you know, we've got a bridge we'd like to sell you because it's nowhere near that. It's what do you peg the true deficit at, Dan? There's a wide range depending on who you listen to. Just curious.
You know, 150 trillion, maybe?
I'm sorry,
five
say it again.
Times, you know, 150 trillion.
Yeah, I think
what
that's
what they promote the budget deficit to be.
That's right. That's much more in line. If you take a look at truthinaccounting.org, it's a good site for understanding the reality behind not just the national scene, but they've got, I forget how many, 50 to 75 of the nation's largest cities. They show you how bad off they are. Very few that are in what we would say is adequate or good shape. And, you know, the thing that's interesting is we are the only developed economy that doesn't include all the liabilities that make up that $150 trillion that Dan mentions. I've seen estimates that it's as high as $250. Depends on the assumption set that you apply to all the items that we've already committed to paying for, be it Social Security indexes for inflation, be it assorted new government spending programs that haven't kicked in yet. Well, like this act that we're getting ready to pass, that 790, I think it's 790 million, and maybe that includes the CHIP act that passed, what, a couple weeks ago, or maybe it's another 350 on top of the 790. The numbers make your head spin when you look at them. And, of course, it still has to be funded. And I don't know, maybe the Republicans will be able to block some of the funding. It's not likely, because if you haven't learned already, the only difference between Democrat and Republican is how we're going to spend it, not how much. And so, unfortunately, you know, the Republicans are very little help when it comes to blocking the total that's going to get spent. We're just going to argue about how and when. And I'll tell you, come 2029 and 2030, this argument's going to change. It's going to be, you know, how do we buy a loaf of bread, or how do we pay for life, you know, when things go up dramatically because we can no longer cover the debt service on the outstanding T-bills, et cetera. And so, again, but Dan, let's talk just a little bit about what's in this act. I know there's been a lot in the press, and it's just, you know, a matter of you paying attention to the news to get a good feel for where the real crux is going to be on who's going to pay, who's going to get hit with this thing.
Well, the middle-class taxpayer is going to get hit with this thing, you know, when it comes right down to it. Most of the people, most of the pundits are saying there's no inflation decrease that's going to happen with this.
The silent tax that everybody's taxed equally on. There's no graduated tax brackets on the inflationary impact. What's that been over the last year, roughly, Dan?
Well, last month it was only 8.6.
Still a lot,
and I say
still a pretty big. Yeah, still a pretty big. Well, yeah, you're right there. I mean, the impact of a little bit lower gas prices on the overall indicator is a bit disproportionate. But bottom line is, you know, if your money's set still, if you haven't moved it into hard assets like these real estate private partnership syndications that we work with our clients, you've lost approximately 10% of your purchasing power. That's assuming your stocks and mutual funds, et cetera, and your stock market based investments have held the same level, which how many people can say that? I know we've got clients that are right. I mean, we've got clients that are 20% down. Probably, I don't know that I would say on average, but I would say it's a significant chunk of America when you look at the stock market that's beaten that 20% drop. But anyway, so the big provisions in this act are we've created a 15% corporate minimum tax rate that's probably not going to affect our clients. This is, I think the final version ended up tagging the companies, corporations with at least $1 billion in financial income that's being reported, and that means, you know, stock market earnings, et cetera, but are paying no tax or have no taxable income. And these are very evil corporations, correct, Dan? It's a good thing that we go out there and clobber.
You mean the people that employ all these people around the world, around the country?
That's right. It's companies that are paying massive amounts of payroll taxes. Go down the list. Property taxes, telephone surcharge taxes, which I noticed that's going up again, at least in the great state of Texas. I assume you saw that article this week. The Public Utility Commission, cleared the decks for allowing a higher surcharge. In any event, so these big companies, like I guess Amazon would be one of the targets, although I'm not sure how much they're affected. But, you know, all the culprits of taking advantage of the tax provisions built into the tax code that they didn't write, they didn't make the rules, Congress made the rules, and for Congress to act like, oh, these people have done even better than we ever imagined our incentives would do, we're going to have to you know, whack them over the head and insist that they pay more taxes. And also, I think the stock buyback provision stayed in. Did you notice, Dan? I think it did. The 1% excise tax. Okay, so it's not good to, by gosh, don't invest in your own company. That wouldn't be a good sign, now would it? You know, that's crazy. And then what else? We've got some prescription drug price reform. I can't remember exactly what you got. Something on that, Dan?
You know, we're getting a credit for the EVs, even on used electric vehicles, EVs. You know, you're getting the tax credit for getting those into service, even with you buying a used one, at which Priory didn't have that.
Yeah. Well, I wonder how long that'll go before we're the bad guys or whoever's buying electric vehicles, right? I mean, they want it until they don't want you to have it. Effectively. And let me tell you, the closer we get to 2029 and 30, the more of the cream, if you will, the tax code that you're likely to see disappears. So in any event, I don't know. But, yeah, there's a lot of credits to subsidize the getting out of the blocks, I suppose, with you know, the renewable energy sources, which it's still interesting that Manchin flipped as he did, because I know that he got some, you know, reduced permitting static, if you will, to help get companies in West Virginia and other states approved on doing new technologies, new energy technologies. But this is still going to affect the coal industry big time, of which he's part and parcel. And let me tell you, I noticed an article that had comments by people in that industry, you know, some of the CEOs, and they're livid. They're just livid that Manchin turned on a dime, literally, and approved this thing. You know, Dan, the article that I remember seeing in Forbes, in fact, I was just pulling it up here, it doesn't really talk about the down payment, quote unquote, on reducing the deficit. Did you Did you get a chance to peg that number, what they claim it is, or what CBO claimed it is? It's a lot less than what, as you might not be surprised to learn.
Yeah, right. One number I see is $100 billion. Is that what you're talking about, the reduction in
Right, debt? Right. It's $100 billion over 10 years.
10 years.
That's not even pocket change, the way this crowd spends, right? But that's a significant down payment.
The interest alone last year was $352 billion on the public debt.
Yeah, I've seen various numbers as at least that. But the way this crowd thinks, oh, they've done something good, right? And, here's a comment. I'm sorry, Forbes does include it. It's down past the bullets. Even if it won't move the needle on inflation, because not too many people, CBO says it will have, again, Congress or Congressional Budget Office, the umpire, if you will, that scores the tax effect of legislation, they say it will have a, quote, negligible effect on inflation in 2022. And in 2023, it might change inflation somewhere between 0.1% lower and or 0.1% higher. Mm-hmm. So somewhere in between there. Bottom line is it's not going to do anything for inflation despite all the rhetoric that you're hearing. And despite the name of the act itself, what's the name of the act, Dan?
Inflation Reduction Act, IRA.
Right. It sounds incredible. It's like, boy, we need to pass this thing as fast as we can, given what inflation's at. And yet we know it'll be anything but anti-inflationary the way the government spends money. It said the government ran a deficit of $2.8 trillion just in the year 2021, and this is going to decrease the deficit by approximately $100 billion over the next decade. So add the 2.8 trillion, well, actually I think that's included in the $30 trillion number they'll cop to. And as you can see, nobody's going to notice any deficit reduction anytime soon. And I'm going to suggest this is going to be more of the same. We're going to spend more than what we say here. I can't remember I do remember. I was reading an article yesterday about when the credits for electric vehicles were originally put into the code by Congress, that it was like, I don't know, Dan, if you can confirm these numbers, but they used the number in the article. It was projected to be a $750 billion, I believe, program. Maybe I'm off a digit. Maybe it was $750 million. In any event, through the end of last year, it's double. It's gone up double, and we just spend it. We just keep doing it because it's a piece of legislation that was passed. And there's no thought to, I always go back to Ross Perot back during the debates for I can't even remember which year. I think it was 92's election, where he made the comment after each of the other candidates had indicated their favorite program that they would put in place if they got elected. And he just went down the list. He was always the last to speak because he had no clout amongst the other folks on the stage. And he ticked off each one of the aforementioned programs, said, you know, that's all fine and dandy. Just one question for you. Who's going to pay for that? Because we don't have any savings. We don't have any excess tax revenues coming in. And so, there's no way to pay for it. And as an example, Dan, I don't have the number in my head for tax collections for 2021, but the deficit's $2.8 trillion, if Forbes is right. And I think tax collections were what, somewhere in the $4-4.5 trillion range?
Well, if you count all taxes, yeah, but you got the biggest chunk of that would be income taxes from individuals.
Yeah, so anyway, all I was trying to suggest is, so we spent a total of almost $8 trillion, it'd be more than that, depending on what that tax collection number was. So we're never constrained by the funds we have available. We'll print more money, and when you can control the printing press, and it's amazing to me how we do that, and it doesn't shake the confidence or rattle the confidence of the especially all the foreign countries that buy our T-bills, you know, and fund our excesses, if you will. But in any event, well, I think we've laid the predicate for enough fear and horror of the tax situation in our country. And so I want to take a break, and then we'll come back and discuss the Roth IRA or Roth 401 conversion again, and we'll, you know, unpeel some of these 20 reasons in the article that I saw this week on why you would not want to do a Roth conversion. And some of them are legitimate. It's just, I think, in given today's times, I'm really getting tired of seeing all these old reasons that you wouldn't want to do a Roth conversion when nobody seems to mention the most overwhelming reason you want to, which is because the rates are getting ready to skyrocket. Maybe not this year, this tax act. Trust me, it's coming. We'll be right back with more of the Be a Planner Tax Mash Show with Nathan Ross and Dan Dubose, CPA.
People always coming up to me and asking what's your secret. With all you do, your attitude just seems to be so good. How do you keep it? Well, I'm not the Dalai Lama, but I'll try to offer up a few words of advice. You better get to living, giving. Don't forget to throw in a little forgiving and love along the way. You better get to knowing, showing a little bit more concern about where you're going. There's a word unto the wise. You better get to living.
Hey, if you'd like to contact Nathan for questions during the show today or during the week, you can text him at 713-581-0195, 713-581-0195, or you can send an email to Nathan at npross.com, Nathan at npross.com.
BeAPlanner.com wants to ask you, when's the last time your tax pro called with a way to save you taxes? Seriously, do you want to work with a planner or a reporter? A planner knows which tax code sections are the best wealth accumulation tools. Less tax, more profit. Learn more at BeAPlanner.com or tune in each Saturday at 5 p.m. for the Be a Planner Show with CPA Nathan Ross right here on AM 700 KSEV.
Okay, welcome back to the Be a Planner Tax Mash Show with Nathan Ross and Dan Dubose. And just before we took a break, I was mentioning that we're going to just, you know, I was giving you all the horror story of the deficit, how it's going up even more with this particular tax act. And I'm not saying that's what it's being promoted to going to cause, but that's what's going to happen. There hasn't been any serious effort to reduce the deficit, and this is anything but a serious effort. And when you consider the fact that the, and I don't know, Dan, I mean, this may be, maybe I'm piling on here, but the thought that you're going to raise $200 billion off of increased IRS efficiency, however that comes, okay? And let's talk about that for a minute. You know, the current level of IRS, I think it's personnel. I don't think it's agents. Do you know the distinction, Dan, when people say there's 86,000 agents? Is that just personnel, or is that, you know, auditors? You have any idea?
All levels, I'm sure, because you got to have support for those auditors, for sure. You got 87,000 new employees they want to hire. Where are they going to get those?
Okay, well, that's where I was headed. But it's more than just you know, finding 87,000 people that would like to work for the IRS. That's going to be a tall challenge in and of itself.
Right.
And then you think about, well, how long does it take to bring those folks up to speed to where they can actually provide value to the IRS or the organization, regardless of whether it's an audit or if it's answering the phone? I mean, look at all the bad answers we get now from the ones they do have, right? And then when you get into some of the niches of the IRS, I know Dan and I are doing some tax dispute resolution work now. We were talking to one of the tax attorneys in our orbit that was lamenting the talent drain that's happened within that given niche. And you know, there's something to be said for some, this would be what we refer to as the appellate level when you get into this level of discussion. And there's something to be said for a perspective of the party across the table from you that actually wants to settle this dispute you're working on and want to get it off their list. Because at the end of the day, their evaluation is based on how many cases can we clear. And that's a welcomed position in most negotiations. However, people that don't know what they don't know and are trying to, you know, dig in on the last dollar in a given situation, that's a lot different dynamic when it comes to settling cases. And so I suspect there's going to be more new, let's just call them newbies, being pushed into that section of the IRS, as with other things. The answers, just as I mentioned, answers on phone calls. You know, hey, Dan and I have been doing what we do for 35 plus years. Do we know the answer to every phone call we get or somebody's got a question? I don't. Dan probably does. He's a lot smarter than me. Don't be confused by the persona, the quiet persona. Dan's got quite a knowledge base. But I'm just curious, Dan, as you say, it's probably maybe as much as 5 years before I think they're going to see the fruits of their labor. And the only reason I'm bringing this up is, again, they're counting on $200 billion. So just consider that $100 billion in deficit reduction money that Congressional Budget Office suggests we have. Those numbers are a little bit fuzzy, aren't they, in terms of adding up to be enough? Yeah, it may not
very
be.
Much so. You know, to do that, was that $200 billion a year they're talking about, or is that $200 billion over that 10-year decade that they usually...
No. That's, as I understood it, that's over the 10-year decade, and that's not the way it'd have to be, because they're talking about $100 billion over the 10-year decade reducing the deficit. So... Right, so they're counting on that to happen. I'm saying it's really going to be over about 5 years if they're lucky. And, you know, there is a little thing called the U.S. Tax Court that maybe some people might end up in that would adjudicate these claims. And, you know, you talk about stress in the system. You know, something like this could absolutely make the IRS, the average IRS employee life, you know, more miserable than what it might already be. In any event, all this to say, as we have throughout the show here, now's the time to consider converting your pre-tax dollars over to Roth. And you know, we've talked about this many times on the air. We especially like the real estate private partnership syndication space for doing that conversion. Why? Because when you invest your retirement funds in pre-tax or after-tax, rather, investments, both actually, and you do valuations on what those investments are worth, we have a slew of probably 20 to 25% private company discounts that allow us to convert a pre-tax 401 or IRA over to a Roth, either IRA or 401 at a significant discount. And so if you're contemplating investing in these real estate private partnership syndications, you don't want to pull the trigger on your Roth conversion if or until you've decided to invest in these transactions. If you want to save some major amounts of money, you want to do that until you've got these into those investments, because we will be able to apply assorted discounts for any of you that are already investing in these transactions. You can go pull up one of the PPMs that you've looked at to, in order to ascertain whether you want to invest or not, or I hope you look at that stuff. It's pretty critical. And what you're going to see is a section entitled Risk Factors that's mandated by the SEC Rule 5, part of their crowdfunding statute, that insists that a myriad of disclosures are placed in that PPM. It's not because the attorneys and the syndicators or lead partners, if you will, want it. It's mandatory by statute. And you will notice a list of 20 to 25. The two big ones are lack of marketability. That means, well, what does that mean, Dan? You tell me. I think you,
it means you
recall.
Can't sell it at will.
That's exactly right. Or you can't even transfer it at will. You got to get permission. Yeah, you'd have to have permission of the partners. I know we've moved things from, you know, one family member to another, or maybe someone invested in their personal name and we created subsequent to that an LLC that we wanted to move that asset to. Those are fairly normal, routine, and will be approved. But you can't say, hey, I want to trade or transfer to convey it to John Doe, somebody I don't even know, or somebody you know, could be your next door neighbor, for, you know, $80,000. You know, I want to sell it. That's not going to be approved in most cases. Maybe if there's been a death or divorce or something changing your, significantly changing the life style. But in any event, so the Roth conversion, the thing that's nice about it is we don't have to ask permission. We don't have to convert the entirety of the investment. Let's say you invested $100,000 in a transaction. We can pick whatever level you want to convert based on how much tax you can afford to pay in a current year. And in fact, Dan, typically we wouldn't convert the whole amount, correct? Why would we not do that?
Well, you got to pay the tax on the conversion amount if it's outside of an IRA or a 401k. So you really need to make sure you're planning out on a regular basis to get those monies over to the Roth.
That's true. And when we say pay it outside, that's not a legal requirement. That's a suggested best practice. You don't want to kill the geese that are laying the golden eggs inside the plan by selling off effectively the dollars that are going to be available to generate tax-free income for the rest of your life. So, yeah, we would suggest you want to have money in a money market account outside the trust. The self-directed 401 trust is what we use, which allows our clients to access their money while it's still in the quote, big company 401k plan, end quote. And there's ways, if you live in the great state of Texas, you're married, happily so, I might add. Would you agree, Mr. DuBose?
Yes.
That's a prerequisite before you hand the keys to the Porsche over. But in any event, you can repartition those 401k assets, roll them into a self-directed model where you determine who, when, where, how much to invest, or how much to pay yourself if you care to go ahead and pick up some tax and maybe penalty if you're under the age of 59 and a half. But it's a wonderful place to live, meaning Texas, when you've got significant funds in a 401 account that you want to take control of, whether it's to invest in real estate or whatever else floats your boat. It's a great way. That's where most Americans and certainly most Texans' wealth is sitting. But in any event, we essentially will get anywhere from, I don't know, depends on the transaction, you know, 40 to maybe 70% in discount. So $100,000 investment could be converted for paying the tax on as little as $30,000. Try that when it's sitting in your Schwab account or your Fidelity account, where you've got a market-based investment and the valuation is determined by what it closed at today versus applying this list of 20 and 25 discounts. Lack of marketability and lack of majority control are each somewhere between 20 and 25% typically, based on what the IRS has either lost recently in tax court on sorted cases or what they've settled or acquiesced on. And so it's huge. And for us to convert your pre-tax over to Roth, where again, understand this, the dollars coming in off those investments for the rest of your life are going to be tax-free, it's a big deal. Now let's talk about the one reason that's on every list I ever see, including the one I'm looking at, as to why you wouldn't want to do this. And I'm just telling you, this issue is still on the list. And the reason is they say that people don't know if they should convert now because their tax bracket may be lower in retirement. Are you kidding me? Even aside from the tax train that's coming, Dan, I'm just curious, as I look across the clients that I have connections with on a daily basis, I don't see too many of them that are getting taxed at a lower rate in retirement than they were when they were working at the big company. How about you? What do you see?
It is amazing to me, because that's what we used to tell everybody. I'm talking about 20, 25 years ago. We'd say, get your money into these 401ks, these IRAs, because your taxes are going to be less when you get to retirement. Well, it's just not true. People making a lot of money, even some of us old timers that are on Social Security, we're getting a 10% raise this year or so, just because of inflation.
It's a vicious cycle. All you guys are causing our deficit to swell because of the inflationary tendency. So you're getting a little your purchasing power back, but the gal that's got their money in a 401 is just sitting there high and dry in terms of retrieving their purchasing power. The other thing that you have to consider the age is always a consideration, but I see another reason on a lot of these lists are, well, you're so young, why would you want to do that? Well, I don't know. I know a lot of our clients, they may be young relative to Dan and I. We're both old guys. But that, I would say, that's even more of a reason to consider an optimal trajectory of converting your Roth, because your runway through retirement is much longer to generate those tax-free dollars. And in fact, about the only reason I could tell you not to do it is if you're, significantly, let's say you're even older than Dan and I, let's say you're 80 years old, you're closing in on the life expectancy the IRS shows for each of us. Males are 85 to 86 years old now on their life expectancy tables. Females are deemed to be in the 87, 88 range. So if you don't have a significant amount of time left to reap the benefits of tax-free income, I could see that as being a reason. Of course, your heirs would probably vehemently disagree, right, Dan? And why would that be?
They're going to be smiling just because you left them that tax-free.
That's right.
You've got to have that 5 years. Even if you did convert it, if you're 80 years old, would you still not have to wait that 5 years to get that break if you did?
Right. If you didn't have, well, on a conversion, yeah, you're right. The clock would start anew on the 5 year 59 and a half rule. So you might be over 59 and a half, but the 5 year period hasn't elapsed. And so I'm going to say on the air today, and I should say this more often, every listener that does not have a Roth IRA should go out today and open one, put a dollar in it. And that's going to help part of the issue. It's not going to solve the issue with regard to conversions. Each conversion starts over in terms of that 5 year clock. There's other strategies we use with the Roth. We actually would suggest you should consider making current year contributions to your 401 Roth. which, by the way, is part of every 401 trust that we adopt. Think of it as a duplex. You've got a pre-tax side. You've got a Roth side. And so the Roth rules are complicated. You should it's not a DIY strategy, as neither is most of the stuff that we talk about here. Investing in real estate private partnerships is certainly not a DIY strategy, although there's those that are out there that claim to allow that or suggest that. I know Self-Made Millionaires platform here in Houston, one of the most successful nationally, does not even focus on these conversions. They simply suggest it's best to rip the Band-Aid off, or I would say cut your right leg off, would be more akin to paying the IRS today and assuming you're going to earn all that money back. That's the furthest thing from the truth. You should really take a look at the math. If you'll go to BA Planner, BEAPLANNER.com, scroll to the bottom of that first page and look at the illustration we do on just a $350,000 retirement account. You're going to leave, if you cut your right leg off, you're leaving approximately $25 million, potentially, using that platform's projected returns that they sell expensive memberships with, which we like the platform. We just don't like the retirement advice, as Red Adair, the famous Houston oil well firefighting legend, used to say, you think the pros are expensive or the professionals are expensive, just try the amateurs. And here's a perfect illustration of amateur tax advice that if you had only known, you could have generated lottery-type earnings, even if you don't keep it 100% invested over the next 30 years. Try write the check to the IRS and see how close you come to the $25 million. Right, Dan?
Zero.
So, zero. I'm sorry. Say again.
That return is zero. Still zero, I believe.
Yeah, that's right. Still nada. Still nada. And not recommended, not a best practice, in spite of how many times you hear it said loudly and from the front of the room or on the air, and I don't care how many years of tax law the person purportedly took in college. I've heard 8 years in his case, and all I can say is, I don't know, where I got my degree in taxation, there was not that many classes you could take unless perhaps you were taking them more than one time, which may be the case. In any event, well, listen, we're coming to the end of the show today. Dan, did you have any last-minute comments or observations?
The tax rate is going up. Just be
prepared. Yeah, that's a good
that.
One. That's a good one. And for those of you that are concerned about that, want to do something now, you've got probably 5, 6, 7 years. We like optimizing that conversion. We don't like doing it all at once. That gets expensive, pushes you way up into the higher brackets. In any event, well, listen, we've enjoyed it. Tune in tomorrow morning at 7 a.m., and we're going to talk syndication math. We'll review a couple transactions and help those of you that are interested in that space begin to understand how to analyze those transactions. And we'll talk to you again tomorrow morning.
Thanks for listening to Be a Planner Show with Nathan Ross, CPA. Be sure to tune in next Saturday at 5 for another edition of Be a Planner Show here on AM 700 KSEB.